This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 424 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And this week, dear people, we are joined by Mo and Gil of Onyx Records, a brand new record pressing plant just opened in Los Angeles, California this year, and they specialize in high-quality vinyl record pressing. Now, we talked to Gil and Mo today all about the vinyl record pressing market, the current length of wait times, why we're seeing more warping and scuffing from new records these days, what Onyx is doing different from other pressing plants. We also pontificate on the future of vinyl record pressing, and lots more. And you gotta hear the story about the $7,000 hashish vinyl record. That's a pretty incredible tale right there. And hey, if you're an artist and you're thinking of getting your music pressed onto vinyl, well, check out onyxrecordpress.com. onyxrecordpress.com. They've got a lot of information there on the site. You can get your quotes right there. Apparently, you can get a record pressing plant tour if you can get yourself to Southern California and work with experts like Gil and Mo and the team to get your music pressed on vinyl. We love supporting the vinyl record community, from shops to stores to artists, and of course, record plants as well. So if you're interested in getting your music pressed onto vinyl, check out onyxrecordpress.com. And finally, I gotta let you know, there is an extended version of this interview only available to our dear, beloved, and strikingly handsome Patreon supporters. Patreon.com/vinylguide is where all the cool kids go. Those people who are Patreon legends get access to another 20 minutes or so of this conversation with Mo and Gil, more record pressing talk, more information, and of course, it's all commercial free and high resolution. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. Help support this podcast and enjoy all the extras up there. And with that, let's have a chat with Gil and Mo of the brand spankin' new Onyx Record Pressing Plant in Los Angeles, California. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we have a couple of guests here from Onyx Record Pressing. I'm pronouncing that right. Is it? That's Onyx? Right. Onyx, okay. All capitals, O-N-Y-X. Yeah. And we've got Mo Espinoza, who you may know as Drumcell and various other ventures, Droid Recordings and the like, and Gil Tamazian. Did I pronounce that right, Gil?
Tamazian.
Tamazian. Okay, I'm probably going to screw that up a few more times, so forgiveness in advance. Who's a vinyl expert producer, Capsule Labs, and these two guys are spearheading a brand new record pressing plant in Los Angeles, California. So first off, congratulations. I mean, opening a record pressing plant in 2023, that's a pretty bold move. What led you guys to do this?
Well, you know, I think the industry definitely calls for a new pressing plant, something innovative, something different, something that caters to the artists in a whole new fashion. Although I've been running a pressing plant in LA for the past 25 years, this is a whole new setup that we're setting up with brand new machines, European state-of-the-art machines that are highly computerized and super smart, and you know, we're able to manufacture some really nice products. It's the first of its kind on the West Coast that we're setting up here, and we're really excited for this new facility because not only are we able to manufacture some really nice records, but we're also able to cater to a local scene that really needs a little bit of industry expertise to guide them and help them on getting a better product made.
You mentioned Onyx is a different type of pressing plant. What does Onyx do different than other pressing plants, say, in the U.S.?
Well, we have an emphasis on quality. Obviously, we're doing 100% virgin vinyl, which, you know, not every pressing plant does that. You know, part of the normal process with 99% of plants out there is to utilize the regrind. Any rejects, any records that don't come out proper, they punch out the label, they grind up the material, and they mix it in with the virgin and they press it as part of the normal process. We like to donate our scrap material to artists, you know, who do other things with the material. And, you know, we have different recycling campaigns that we're working on. And we like to use 100% virgin material. We feel that, you know, your music is precious to you. And we feel the same way about it. And we want every record to be absolute perfection. And paying a little bit of attention to the detail is what separates us from everybody else. Not only that, we like to bring the artists into the facility and kind of show them the limitations of what we're working with, kind of teaching them the boundaries and what we have to work with. And by establishing this relationship, it kind of betters the product each time we do a project. They know what we're working with and they set up the project better, and we're able to communicate a little bit with the artist as opposed to just meeting with a rep in a cubicle that takes your money and lets you know when the records are ready. You know, we kind of like to talk, yeah, you know, bring people in and teach them a little bit.
Oh, that's always helpful. So in your experience, what are some of the, I guess, biggest or most common mistakes you see artists making that this process tends to course correct a bit?
I think just a little bit of rushing and not knowing and you know, going for the cheapest pressing plan out there. You know, a lot of people just go off of numbers. Hey, what's my bottom figure? You know, what are we going to pay for this product? Okay, per unit, what's it going to cost me? And that's great, but you know, you kind of have to know why, you know, one car costs more than another car. You know, not everything is apples and oranges. You know, some things are, you know, done a little differently. And when people are a little inexperienced with the vinyl making process and they're just going off of pure numbers, you know, no one explains to them what the difference is. And, you know, the final outcome, by the time they get their record and they're not happy with it, it's too late. They've already spent a bunch of money. They waited a long time to get their record. And I know I was discouraged the first time I manufactured my record. No one was there to guide me. I just went with the cheapest pressing plan I could find, thinking, hey, it's a record, it's going to sound great. And when it didn't come out to my expectations, I was really discouraged. So discouraged, I didn't even want to press another record again. And when I went to the pressing plant, I said, hey, you know, this isn't what I was expecting. There was really not a lot of help there. And that's when I realized, you know, I bet you there's other people who are frustrated like me. And I dove deep and tried to make a difference.
I guess that's important because you need to know what you're sacrificing, right? You know, obviously price is very important to people. But, you know, the trade-off is understanding what you're leaving on the table or what you're not putting on the record, what audio or what quality isn't going out there. No, I totally get that. So when people order records, is there like a checkbox that says, you know, I could visit the plant, or how do you get people into that sort of routine?
Well, not everybody's in town, you know, and when people aren't in town and they can't make a personal appearance and a visit, we still like to get on the phone with them and you know, give them a few minutes of input, you know, and talk about it. If somebody sends me the audio and if I feel like it could be, you know, done a little differently, better the product in the mastering stage, we like to pump the brakes a little bit, call them, talk to them about it. We don't just say, hey, we've got a bunch of projects on the table that need to get out the door, let's just rush through it all. You know, if I gotta kind of give them an option and say, hey, if we do this and this, it might, you know, I'd have a little better outcome, and then give them the option to make that decision, you know, it makes me feel a little bit better at the end of the day that we did everything we could to kind of come up with a final product that everybody's happy with.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned the materials, like Onyx doesn't do the regrind, keeps everything virgin vinyl. Does that include like flashing? Because I know there's a lot of kind of slop and a lot of extra when it comes to record flashing. And I always assume most plants put those back in the hoppers or back in the grind because it's a lot of material, and it's not cheap these days, especially after the pandemic. I think all the materials have gone up at least, you know, 50-60%, if not more.
Exactly.
What happens to that? You said you sell it to artists. Where does that end up?
You know, we're working with different kinds of artists that like to do vinyl art or make contraptions and things that, you know, they want to experiment with, and we're talking to a different organizations that can repurpose the material and give us credit for it. You know, we're also talking to manufacturing plants that could turn it into, you know, PVC piping and other things that they want to use it for. We definitely don't want to put music on it. We've tried it. It works. But, you know, we want record number 1000 to sound just as good as record number one. And no matter what you do, somehow things get adulterated and the polymers are not the same. When the vinyl gets super hot and it gets pressed, you know, it has a little bit more of a brittle tendency to it than being shiny and flexible. And, you know, it's not necessarily wrong to use regrind. Every other pressing plant does it. It's fine. We just want to make a product that there's absolutely no cutting corners, whether it's the jacket printing, whether it's the labels or the machines themselves, our customer service. We want to make a difference in the industry and we want people to feel good about where they're getting their records manufactured. So that's just one little thing that we could do to make a difference.
I've got so many questions. And by the way, Mo, please stop talking over everyone. I'd appreciate that.
Well, hey, man, the guy's saying the right thing. So, you know, let him have the platform.
I've just busted your balls. Okay. So, because quality also goes to like the stampers, right? You know, is there a limitation? You know, I guess stampers are only good for about 500 to 1,000 records. Is that right? Some pressing plants push that number up. What is Onyx's position on that?
So you know, we like to change out stampers every 1,000 records. For when we're doing black material, usually the rule of thumb is 1,000 records per set of stampers. If we're dealing with color vinyl, and Mo knows the answer to this, when we're dealing with color vinyl, we like to change out stampers every 500 records because the color vinyl seems to be a little bit more taxing on the material, on the metal. So we like to swap it out every 500 on the color vinyl and every 1,000 on the black.
Why is the material, like what, it's just harder on the stampers? Is that like the dye in the material that has some sort of chemical reaction?
So black vinyl, and that's where the name Onyx comes from. We really like black vinyl. It's formulated to sound the best. And we have an emphasis on audio quality. Black is formulated to sound the best and perform the best. It has all the ingredients needed to make a good sounding record. Now, when you're dealing with color, you have to leave out a lot of ingredients to achieve that color. Some of the ingredients that are in the black will not make a clear pink record. So they're missing a lot of these ingredients that are formulated for sound to achieve those colors. So it doesn't release from the nickel stamper. When the pressing machine opens up, you almost hear a difference on how the press opens and how the material releases from the metal. And this is where the strain comes from on the metal. You know, it's the ingredients that helps it release and flow and melt, and the temperature differences. You know, we normally, when we're dealing with color vinyl, we have to turn the temperatures down a little bit because it's just a completely different beast entirely.
Now, I've heard, I mean, again, just I've never worked in a record pressing plant, so this is all kind of third hand, that clear vinyl tends to be at its most pure because even black has dyes and coloring in it. Is that fair, or maybe am I misunderstanding that?
That's one way to look at it. but no, I think it's not so much as being pure. It's just a different material. Black sounds the best.
Okay.
Whether clear is pure or black has more ingredients, we need those ingredients for sound. To help that, you know, perform the way it performs. You know, you have microscopic grooves and you want the material to flow and go inside and also release and react to temperatures in a certain way. And clear is definitely missing a lot of those ingredients. So you could call it pure, but we kind of need those ingredients. And it's clear is really difficult to work with. Opaque is actually not that bad. Like when we're dealing with opaque blue and opaque white, those are a lot easier to work with because we can get those ingredients in there. Clear vinyl is the most difficult material for me to work with. It's finicky. Okay. It's touchy. You know, we got to really be careful on how we run it.
Talk to me a little bit about the supply chain, because PVC pellets, do you buy them in pellet format, I assume? And yes. Where do you get them from? And why have you selected that level of supply chain over probably some other budget options?
We can't really tell you that information. You know, we have a few suppliers that we're dealing with. You know, we like to use European vinyl for certain quality reasons. Sometimes we use vinyl that comes from other countries. Sometimes we've tried domestic materials as well. And sometimes things change. You know, you might have a good run for a couple of years and then material changes and you might have to try another vendor. But there's not too many. We can't really go out there and say, hey, you know, we found a plastic company and we're going to try to run this material. Vinyl material for records is a very specific formula. And it's been formulated for records. It's not being used to make a, you know, bunch of signage and trinkets and other things. And it's for records. And there's not many out there that are specifically formulated for vinyl records. So we use what we can. And sometimes we have to use what's available to us. Yeah. But you're right. It's not cheap. And since the pandemic, prices have gone up. And this is where the manufacturing prices have gone up for us because we're paying 30% more for the material than we were before. So we have to raise our prices. And it's really hard to explain that to the end user, the client, of why pressing records is so pricey. And then obviously it ends up, you know, being handed down to the retail. When people are out there buying vinyl records online and at the store, they're like, why am I paying so much more for a vinyl record? Even the garage sale records have gone up. You know, the used market for records have gone up and people are like, why? You know, and material costs have gone up so much that if you have a vinyl record, hold on to it.
<You know? laughs> Yeah. Yeah. It seems to be, you know, the record, we'll call it revival or whatever, of the last decade and a half. You know, the last few years, especially through the pandemic, it just completely hockey stick shot up. Is that settling down now? Are we still seeing the same level of growth numbers in vinyl?
Yeah, I mean, the interest has been in flux. I think that things are starting to balance out a little bit. There definitely was an emphasis on the growth over the pandemic, like you said. But I think we're kind of at a point in the music industry I could speak for, you know, music lovers and purists, who I'm sure is a lot of your followers as well, with pretty much every physical format of music that's not in existence, vinyl's kind of really stood out as something that people can rely on to have a physical, tangible product in their hand. You know, especially if you're a true music lover and you're a collector and you want something that you hold dear to your heart, to the music that you love and you appreciate. I mean, really, the only other options we have is streaming. I mean, CDs is not even really a format that's accessible as well anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so many different roles that play into this. And I guess it's really dependent on which genre or what sector of the music you're speaking of. But I mean, even if you look at performance artists, musicians and producers are not really making any money off streaming. So selling music has become pretty much non-existent. And one of the most substantial streams of revenue for music producers is performance and touring. That's become the only place where you can still make a substantial amount of income to actually survive on. And, you know, that's also pushed us in a position where, you know, having merchandise is very important at the gigs that you play, and to be able to provide your music to your fans, you know, and you see this whole world of niche records coming out that are catered, you know, hand numbered, hand signed, special colored splatter records, vinyls. Everyone's just trying to be able to provide something that they can connect to. And I think that's resonated to times nowadays for the world that we live in, that's changed after so many hundreds of years of recorded music. This is, you know, it's really hard to think of another perfect way to display music. I mean, what better way is there to have a 12x12 inch record with the artwork and all the liner notes and everything that you love about the music you have? So I think a lot of artists have really found their groove with vinyl. I mean, you know, especially with this new resurgence, and I see it to continue to grow over time.
So Onyx is looking for that kind of quality niche, people who are very artists who are very particular and want to invest in have their listeners having the best experience they can. Does that mean that you guys avoid doing things like, I'll say, splatter pressings or some of the more arty approaches that may potentially compromise the sound?
Not necessarily. I mean, we're still pressing a full range of colors with all of our records, you know, and it's certainly possible to do a lot of mixed vinyls and do colors. A lot of these newer splatter records are kind of manufactured in a different way than the machines that we currently have to operate. But we are still able to achieve a pretty wide range of interesting stuff. I mean, yeah, we do like black vinyl. We do like the quality and the fidelity that it delivers. But at the same time, we understand both the collector's aspect of things as well as the marketability of being able to present something special visually to what you want to do musically.
I think most importantly, it's explaining to the client the difference. You know, it's not that we're not going to do it. It's just, you know, giving them a little bit of knowledge so they could better make that decision on their own. I have a lot of clients that come to me thinking it's the same. Hey, can I get mine in clear blue? Absolutely. But me taking 5 minutes and explaining the difference between black material and clear blue helps them make that decision. And when they do receive their product and they say, my test pressing sounded a certain way, but then I got the final product and I noticed it sounds a little different.
Yeah.
The fact that we take a few minutes and explain this to them before they wait 3 months to receive that and ask the question is where we like to kind of show the difference. We'll press it, you know. Well, I'll press records that are 25 minutes per side versus 18 minutes per side. But the fact that we explain the difference to the client ahead of time, this is how an 18-minute side is going to sound versus a 25-minute sound side is going to sound. And that makes a huge difference at the end of the day for the client. They feel a lot more comfortable going into whatever decision that they're making. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll add, I mean, like the last record I produced from, I pressed for myself, actually, Gil pressed it before we started Onyx. You know, I did a run of like 250 various colored vinyls. And I also did, you know, another 250 run of pure black. And I put them solely on Bandcamp without distribution to sell directly. And I was actually surprised how many people just bought the black vinyl. You know, you're catering to two different types of people. There's like the kind of hi-fi purists who want their black vinyl. They don't care about the frill and all the other things. They want something that they can sit down and have the whole ritual of listening to a record and enjoying it. And then there's the true collector who's like, you know, holy shit, this thing looks awesome. I want to put it on my wall. You know, I enjoy this, or whatever the case may be. A limited edition of colored vinyl with some purple swirls in it or something like that. And, you know, for me, that was a test to be able to see exactly what was going to sell. And I was actually surprised by how many of the black vinyls I sold as well. So, you know, the options are there.
A lot of artists that I see, they will do just what you said. You know, they'll offer, you know, 200 black, 100 swirl, 50 splatter, and a few things like that. You know, does Onyx cater to that sort of approach?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Is it kind of a pain to be able to switch over from to just do like 50 splatter or a certain limit? You know, I mean, what sort of constraint? They're the same stampers, but you have to just change out the material. What is that process like for a record plant? And I assume that that does cost a premium for that.
It is a little bit difficult, but it's not so much a difficulty. It's not complicated. What it does entail is there's a switchover,
transitional
record. So if the client is willing to accept the transitional records, like if you're trying to get 100% white records and you want to transition to white from black, there may be 25 records in there that still have specs of black. That costs a little bit of a setup if you want 100% one color. But if some people are willing to accept the transitional colors, you know, if it's a little swirls and stuff, we don't have a problem with it. It's not that complicated for us to switch the material, but to go from one pure color to another pure color takes a bit of material to get there. So That's the only difficult part.
I mean, basically, as you pour a new vinyl into the machine, the extruder is still pulling out individual scraps of the last color, and then they start to mix, and you might get a few where it's like white with little black splatters in it, and then it starts turning kind of gray, and then it starts morphing back into the next color as the excess vinyl from the last run starts to run through it over time.
Right. Now, that makes sense. And those transitional ones in themselves become, you know, unique and their own product.
Absolutely. I mean, as a consumer myself, I think that'd be pretty cool, but you know.
So do you go in there at night there, Mo, and press your own records and do some wild stuff on your own music?
Hey, man, if you get the opportunity, sure, why not? I mean, you know, it's an art form in its own right to just kind of see what kind of interesting things happen with it. And it's a fun process and it looks cool.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in the last few years, I've noticed in my own collection, in records that I'm buying, new records, that I'm seeing a lot more records arrive warped. And then also scuffed. And these are just right out of the shrink wrap. And I've also kind of heard, you know, from various social medias, a lot of people are kind of seeing that as well. I don't know if that's just a, you know, more people complaining or anything like that about it. But what's your opinion? I'm not accusing Onyx of that. But why do you think that we're starting to perceive more warpage and more, I guess, mishandled records on arrival?
So I was actually speaking at the Making Vinyl conference in Frankfurt, Germany last year. And the topic I was covering was basically that, you know, the quality constraints and issues that we're starting to see recently in the past few years and where they're coming from and why they're here and what we could do about them. And the what we came up with, you know, as we're trying to put this presentation together and talk about it a little bit more and digging deeper is, first of all, there's a lot of new pressing plants that have emerged in the industry that have started in the last 5 years or so. Making records, although there's equipment available now and there's a lot of new pressing plants that are, you know, starting up, it's not something that, you know, you could just hit the ground running. It takes a little bit of a learning curve, and it's a craft. There's a lot of kind of working out the kinks as you know. I know the first 5 years I was pressing records, I had to deal with these and really learn the craft. And I could just imagine what some of these new pressing plants are dealing with, you know, just getting into the business. There's that, plus there was people rushing and hiring new, you know, crews to try to extend their hours of meeting their deadlines. So you have inexperienced people, you have plants that haven't been around for 10 years or so and don't have the experience. You have, you know, kind of go, go, go attitude, get the product out the door. And not everybody likes to kind of take the time to really pay attention to quality control. I know I was receiving a lot of test pressings for the moment that I wasn't pressing and I had to send some product out to other plants. Every plant we sent stuff out to, the test pressings were coming back warped, and we just couldn't understand why somebody is not taking the time to make sure that they're pressing flat records, such a basic and thing you would expect the records, you know, to be flat. But there's a lot of other things. Not only are they being warped, but then the centers are being punched slightly off, so you have like this tone arm swaying side to side, causing modulation. You have, you know, crackly, you know, stuff that's happening from non-fill or maybe regrind or things that, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it that cause these issues. But this is why we're doing what we're doing. We like to make a difference, you know, and we like to kind of bring our expertise and the equipment, the knowledge, and kind of really implement higher standards of quality control.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of that is the issues we've described. It could be chalked up to maybe just new or inexperienced people on the tools. I mean, we lost probably a generation of people working in vinyl pressing plants and now having to retrain, you know, a whole new army of people to do it. So if they don't know that the temperature needs to be exactly 168 and they're okay at 166, that could result in a variation of the audio quality or even kind of record, the physical quality of the record.
I mean, it's a multivariate situation too. I mean, you can't paint everything with one brush, but you know, especially since this boom with the vinyl resurgence, you know, we started seeing pressing plants that were backed up 12 months, 13 months, 14 months turnaround time just to get a record manufactured. And you can't help but obviously see the factor that for a lot of bigger plants, quantity starts to matter more than quality. I mean, because you're just so backed up with a mass amount of work, people are just moving fast. And they're just doing things, and there's a lot less emphasis on quality control check, you know?
So what is the lead time right now? It was 8, 12 months or more, I think, a couple of years ago. What's it come down to now?
We'll be back after these messages.
Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGVinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional play-tested third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic. You have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com.
Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. What is the lead time right now? It was 8, 12 months or more, I think, a couple of years ago. What's it come down to now?
I think the more reputable plants that, you know, are putting out really good records, currently they're about 7-8 months. Some smaller plants are a little bit quicker than that.
You said seven to eight months.
Yeah.
Okay.
The bigger, more reputable plants, you know, we're still hearing that some of the smaller guys that have, you know, the capacity for the business, we're hearing a little bit quicker. So times are catching up a little bit. We have a really fast turnaround time with our new capacity and our machines. We're able to turn records, you know, 8 to 10 weeks, couple months. We're able to go from beginning to end right now. I don't know how long that's going to last. That's where we're at right now at our current turnaround time. We are increasing our capacity with more machines. We got more machines coming our way, and we'll constantly keep, you know, increasing our capacity as need be. But, you know, one difference with us that other plants, I don't know how many other plants implement, is we like to cut it off at some point instead of just constantly taking more work and increasing the turnaround times. I let my clients know, I'm like, we've hit our normal capacity, and we're not accepting any orders at this time. Just please come back to where I could do it in a more timely fashion and not be so rushed to where we're making mistakes.
So now it seems like, you know, in the early months of the operation, there is capacity, and 8 to 10 weeks is quite good. Are you running several shifts now? Like, what's the daily production cap that Onyx has?
We're running not multiple shifts, but we're running full time. Mm-hmm. If we need to increase shifts and bring in more staff and do that kind of a process, then we're ready to do that. But at this point, we're pretty well caught up. We're doing okay.
Okay. And in terms of people who want a career in a record pressing plant. I mean, it sounds to me very fascinating. I'm sure it's not nearly as sexy in real life as it is in my head. But like, what is the sort of process that someone needs to take to be able to learn the trade? And for example, when Onyx, when you guys bring someone in, perhaps junior staff, how do you skill them up? What path do they need to take to become a reliable expert record pressing plant dude?
That's a good question. I get approached all the time, you know, with people trying to, you know, ask for a job or do internships or get their foot in the door as any which possible way they can to try to get a, you know, a career going in here in a pressing plant. It's a really difficult thing. Finding good labor is hard in all industries, and it's particularly hard when you're dealing with such dangerous equipment that takes a long learning curve. I like to bring people in and who are going to be family, who are going to stick with us for a long time. It's not something that I could teach somebody in a couple weeks or a month. It literally takes sometimes a year or longer to really be able to get somebody up to speed where you can, you know, leave them with the machines and walk away and know that everything's going to come out perfect the way you want it exactly. But you know, it's a long, extensive process, and we have brought people aboard and trained them and teach them how to do this thing. But it doesn't happen that often. I like to wear multiple hats. I do most of the work myself here. There's other jobs that need to be done here at a pressing plant other than pressing records, and we definitely utilize employees to do a lot of that work. But most of the critical stuff, which is manufacturing and pressing records, I do 99% to 100% of it myself.
You do a lot of the mastering as well. Is that right? Okay,
mastering and lacquer cutting as well.
Oh my gosh.
To wear a lot of hats.
You do. Yeah. And a few gloves too. Doing things like infinite loops, hidden tracks.
Yep.
What's the wild? Talk to me about some of the wilder mastering jobs you've been involved with.
Yeah, there was some jobs like that. Obviously the lock grooves and the ghost tracks.
Done quite a few for me as well.
Yeah. I can't remember all of them at the time, but you know, but I did a record out of 100% hash, and it actually made it to Billboard. It was the band Slightly Stupid picked up the concept, and we pressed a record out of 100% hashish. It was like if you Google the $7,000 hash record, you'll see the Billboard article on that.
So, okay, hang on a sec. I do want to add this, if that's okay.
It's up to Mo. You think we should add this?
Yeah, go for it. Fuck it. Who cares? It's legal.
Yeah, it is now, right? Yeah. Yeah, that yeah. You're not pressing 100% cocaine, right?
Oh, that might be next. Talk to some of our cartels down in Colombia.
So that's a very Cheech and Chong concept. A full hashish record. Walk me through how that happens.
So it was my idea. It was a concept that I had many years ago of, you know, experimenting. And one of the things we experimented, this was at a time where, you know, the whole legalization campaign, the movement was happening, especially in California. And I had an idea of why don't we try to experiment with pressing a record out of 100% hash. And one of the labels I was working with was really big in that culture. The label was Slightly Stupid, and the label was Silverback Management, and they had the band Slightly Stupid on their label. And John Phillips was a dear friend of mine who I presented the idea to. He loved it. They called up some growers up in Northern California, and they kept driving down, you know, all this big supply of properly, you know, prepared bubble hash, and we kept experimenting and trying to put music on hash. Yeah,
experimenting, okay.
We were trying to press a record that can be played and smoked right after. So it was holding the music, and we had to really kind of do crazy things, like go out of the press into a freezer and to help metal release. And basically what we were able to finally achieve is you put the needle on the record, you get to hear the music, and then you burn the record and you smoke it. And High Times got involved, and they were interested in the story, and Billboard did a big write up on the project, and it's now in a Billboard article called the $7,000 hash record.
And how many was it? Just one record? Was it? Did you do okay? One, okay.
Just one.
Okay. $7,000,
$7,000 each. How many do you want?
Now, okay.
How many would you like?
That was pre-legalization, right? So now I would imagine the cost of developing one of those would have come downward quite a bit. Is that, would that assumption be correct?
No, it was not pre-legalization. It was legal at that point. Okay. The cost have come down quite a bit since then.
So an artist could perhaps make half a dozen now or something like that. Did it sound okay?
It did not sound okay. It sounded horrible. But the fact that it actually held the music and played, you know, even though it sounded crackly and you know, it was still a major achievement, you know, to be able to have a groove, you know, that was 100% hush. That was playing audio, and it doesn't last too long. You know, the grooves are soft, and after you play them a couple times, you know, it pretty much, you know, changes its form quite fast. But
who got the record? Who ended up getting it? And I assume they smoked it, or
they smoked point, it. They smoked the whole record. Yeah.
Oh, it's for the band. The band got it.
The band and the label and the management. It got passed around. You know,
Yeah. Well, there went their $7,000. It's like, yeah, no wonder the music industry is in trouble. I mean,
yeah,
I love that.
I'm waiting for a request to come in to press records with someone's like Human Ashes or something like that. You know,
would you do that? If
you've heard rumors of it, I don't know what the process would be, but you know, I've heard rumors of, or at least people have brought the idea up of dreaming of, oh, when I pass and I'm cremated, I want to press, you know, a small run of my favorite record and pour my ashes or my remains into that.
Yeah.
That seems like a very interesting concept.
I had the guy on the show out of the UK that does that.
I
forgot the name of his service. I think it's Vinality or something like that. It's kind of, and my wife and I've actually talked to her about this. She's like, do you want your ashes pressed in a record? I'm like, well, I don't know. I got no better ideas. But would you guys do that if someone said, hey, my Uncle Frank just, you know, passed. He was a record collector. He wrote a song in college. And here's his ashes. Help me out.
I don't know. You want to put that in the machine?
We could offer the Uncle Frank special. Why not? You know, I've had some weird requests before. There was a moment where I was experimenting with different materials such as rose petals and fabric and lace, and explaining this to one of my clients. You know, he came back to me and said, would you press a record with used panties in it? And that was a little disturbing, I have to say.
No. Yeah. Dude, lose my number.
Send it, sell it in a vending machine in Japan or something like that. Yeah.
Well, we just had the guys, you know, Romanus Records? The guys at Romanus, where they make the records that are filled with sand and liquids, and they put things like scorpions in them, bullet casings. They just did a record that's an actual effect pedal. They have the circuitry inside the record. And you could plug a guitar in and another out to a speaker. You know, they won some awards from that. So they do some pretty amazing stuff. If you look back in our recent episodes, you'll see, you know, Romanus Records, and we talk about the stuff that they've done. So there's a lot of very, I'll call them stunt records.
You can
only do a few of those. I think the hash one would fall into that as well. But
Going to say, there was an artist in the early 2000s, a techno producer. I think he was from Belgium. I could be wrong. His name was Glenn Wilson. He had a label called Hero, and he used to take blank lacquers and take like a wood carving tool And he would actually draw pictures into the lacquer, like he would draw his own pictures. So one side of the record would actually be the music, and then you flip it over, and it would just be a repress of that one lacquer that he would hand draw.
Oh, now you mentioned earlier about lasers. Do you guys work with any lasers to be able to make some of the effects or the hologram type thing? Is that something that can be done at Onyx?
Yeah, actually, me and Mo have been talking about it. We're getting ready to do some more experiments with the lasers and try to incorporate some of that into the products. There's a really great innovative stuff that's happening. One of our industry colleagues, Richard, has been doing really amazing work with lasers, and we'd really like to get into some of that as well.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely been a topic that's been coming up quite a bit. And,
yeah.
Something we've been experimenting with.
Interesting potential there. If you fast forward 5 or 10 years, in absence of a crystal ball, what do you think the technology or the next step is for vinyl records? How will the process have been improved?
Mo?
It's hard to say, really. It's a medium of music that's kind of been untouched since its beginning. And at the same time, what room for growth do we have with that? And I think a lot of what we've seen with color vinyl, and we've seen people now cutting holograms into records. We've seen everything from, doing things with what's it called again, the shimmer, the rainbow shimmer that's on records. I mean, mostly from what I can see is it's been more of finding creative ways to use the tools that we have to come up with interesting products that please our customers and the end users and the collectors themselves. I think the machines that we have been a pretty substantial innovation in producing records itself, being fully automated systems. State-of-the-art technology, because let's face it, the mass majority of pressing plants that are out there are using machines that are got how many old years old now, Gil?
Yeah, they're pretty, we consider them vintage.
Yeah. I think the ability to print records faster, the ability to make a higher quality record is probably where the innovations lie. Where things go into the future is beyond my ability to see, but I'm sure we'll be seeing things soon.
I mean, there's been those incremental improvements, and as you said, I mean, the technology, goes back to Thomas Edison. I mean, conceptually, but then throughout time, and really, especially over the last 20 years, I think we've seen a huge quality uptick, or at least the capability for a quality uptick. I recognize not all plants are taking every point in that chain as seriously as maybe Onyx is, but those improvements in sonic qualities are there. I'm thinking of more in lines of something like, and I know this organization went bust a while ago, but HD vinyl, they were looking at a different way of being able to approach a record. We're going to see a prevalence of 3D printing, I think, in the next 5-10 years. I mean, those sort of innovations, do you think we're going to see a potential seismic change in approach and how we look at making records?
Seismic, I don't know, but I've seen various forms of different things coming out. I mean, there's been people who've been playing with the idea of like injection molding with records. There's a pretty substantial amount of like home lathes where people are kind of cutting to these plastic discs and doing kind of one-off discs themselves. I haven't seen anything in particular that's lived up to the quality of the classic form of how we make music today or how we make records today. But I think we're going to continuously see different things that come, things that go, things that get better, things that sound great and on paper, but don't sound great on vinyl.
Right.
But what sticks will be truly interesting to see come.
Now, I recognize that there is a focus on the materials. I'm curious as to the difference of something like a 180 gram versus a 200 gram versus something that's less, like 140 or something like that. Is there truly a significant difference between those, let's say, three record weights, when you're using the materials and the virgin vinyl like Onyx does the record weight play a large part in sound?
Yes and no. You know, having a heavier record definitely feels nice in your hands, and it's a much more elegant product, and it's less susceptible to weather and warping and damage. And that's an amazing kind of a feel to have in your hands. But we have a few things to worry about right now. Obviously, we have material that's gone extremely high in cost. So 180 gram records are now kind of really expensive to manufacture. Can the average listener hear the difference? If I was to play you a 140 gram record and a 180 gram record, and we did the blindfold test, what percentage of the time will you be able to pick out the 180 gram record? I don't know. We should probably do the test and find out. But I don't think it's that. There's other measures that we can take to make a better record. In my personal opinion, doing stuff with a properly dialed in machine with virgin vinyl, I can get much better results than somebody doing stuff that's not so experienced with 180 gram vinyl and utilizing regrind.
Finally, and this is just for something that I've been wondering for some time, as a record pressing plant, once you make the records, then they're kind of housed in the sleeves until the inners, right? The inner sleeve before the proper sleeves are available. Some use paper, some use kind of a plastic, I guess, polymer. Some use Mophie sleeves. Yeah. What's your preference? What do you think is the best approach for those?
We offer both. We offer regular paper. We offer poly-lined. We on our website we recommend poly-lined sleeves. It protects the record a little bit more as they're going in to prevent any scuffs, surface scuffs. You know, it's definitely available, and we offer both of those products. But yeah, it does go into a paper sleeve before it goes into the jackets, and usually it gets done in the same time.
Paper sleeves, to me, again, and maybe I'm just reading into this, it seems to be more, I guess, abrasive to the record, as well as, and I think we've all had this experience, opening a record and you get all this paper bits kind of coming out, flakes and dust and stuff from paper. So I don't know, I tend to lean away from paper, but maybe I'm just being hypersensitive to it. What's your opinion?
There's also, you know, the packaging process of how people are sleeving the records. When you're doing it by hand and you're kind of, you know, sliding a record and into a sleeve, and it's a little difficult to do it without having the record touch somewhere on the paper. This new technology we have with our machine, it's all done automatically without human touch. It's the paper is spread with air, and the record gets put into the sleeve, and you don't have any fingerprints. Everything is done and cured consistently, so it's a much better process. Mm.
Do you guys do 45s as well? Because I know there's a lot of DJs that they do these 45 sets.
Sure.
You guys aren't involved in 45s, just 12-inch.
We're strictly 12-inch.
Yeah. Strictly 12-inch. I still collect a lot of 45s. I've got boxes of 7-inches back here. You know, I see the appeal. I collect a lot of rare grooves, really old, you know, anything from, you know, 50s ska records to, you know, some funk stuff or, you know, anything like that. It's something that I'm passionate about. But we decided to make an emphasis on focusing on 12-inch vinyls.
Yeah. The reason is because 12-inch records do sound better. And because we're a pressing plant that has an emphasis on audio quality, it all comes from the diameter of the record. When the diameter gets smaller and smaller, you lose your high frequencies. And 7-inch records do sound a little more on the duller sound. Mm-hmm. Dollar side, and 12-inch has a superior sound quality, and there are other pressing plants even in California that only manufacture 12-inch records and stay away from sevens, and at the moment we're going to be strictly 12 inch.
Yeah, you see even a lot of producers also who, you know, they'll put the track that they want to sound the best on the outside of the 12 inch record. You know, they want it on the outside because it's got like the deepest bass. They want, you know, plus 6 decibels on the cut. They want it to be loud, you know, and as you start to go closer and closer to the inside of the record, you start to sacrifice some your fidelity and get the saturation. And so, you know, goes back to exactly what we said before. We just decided that's where our focus was.
That's probably part of the conversation that Mo, you and Gil have with these artists that are getting ready to press their records about even sequencing. You know, you want your big hit or the track you're pushing closer to the edge.
And actually mastering, you know, is a different process. A lot of people say, hey, you know, I got my engineer did vinyl mastering already, you know, and we're just ready to cut. Well, you know, unless you're mastering with a lathe in front of you, you don't know and think about this stuff. But depending on where the music lands on the record, we tend to apply a different mastering process to each song based on the sequence. And again, this is a conversation we have with the client and explain this stuff to them and make proper decisions and in and out of the studio and the mastering process to try to achieve the best sounding record.
Well, all right, Gil, Mo, it's been a very enlightening conversation. Thank you very much for coming on the Vinyl Guide and giving us all that insider scoop information. And I definitely want to hit you up because I'm going to be in Southern California at the end of November. Going to see my mom for Thanksgiving and blasting nice through LA. So I'd love to see what you guys are up to and, you know, see the plant in action. So I'm assuming it's open for tours, not just for people who are buying records, but for people who are curious about the art of making them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. We would love to have you to come by and check it out.
It'd fantastic. All right. And we'll talk records and you can show me where some good Mexican food is. Cause that's another thing we can't get in Australia.
I was just about to say, you know, there's a Mexican restaurant down the street from us. Gil pointed it out to me the other day, blew my mind.
Amazing.
All right.
So we're going to have to do that.
It sounds like a wonderful afternoon. All right. Gil, Mo, thank you so much. Again, everyone, Onyx Record Pressing. It's onyxrecordpress.com. I'll put the link in this episode page. And I wish you guys the best of luck on your new venture here. Sounds like you've got a great plan and look forward to watching the growth continue for you guys.
Much been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Best of luck to those guys. OnyxRecordPress.com. I'm going to try to hit them up when I'm in Southern California later this year. Check them out if you are as well. OnyxRecordPress.com. And again, don't forget there's an extended version of this interview only available to our Patreon legends, patreon.com/vinylguide. Help support the show. Get extended episodes, commercial-free episodes, high-resolution episodes, and lots more. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, peoples. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, do me a favor. Jump up on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave your old buddy Nate a nice review. 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars. Say something nice. That is a huge help to us. And of course, sharing on social media is as well. Share these episodes in your Facebook or tweet them out on Twitter. Put them in Insta TikTok or whatever you do up there. That is always appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.